Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 806, May the 18th, 1986. Before I get into the material, because then I move pretty quickly, I want to remind you that if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I will send you bibliography sheets of these programs so that you can have the information that I'm discussing and the location of the articles or books that you can refer to go further into this material. Some of this I have to go pretty quickly because there's so much news that's just pouring out, and the rest you can look up at your libraries yourself. The U.S. Navy ship was hit in the Gulf this weekend, and of course Ronald Reagan is, in quotes, watching it very seriously, and George Shultz is commenting on the news about the seriousness of this event. Now that Gary Hart is off the news for the past 2 weeks, and we're ready for week three of testimony and hearings, I believe that this is another great, great diversionary of the Reagan administration to illustrate how important his agents were in the Middle East with that strategic location and how we need intelligence and that they were working with people behind the lines. This great diversionary will go down in history as the Gulf of Tonkin, excuse for Lyndon Johnson to get us embroiled further into the Vietnamese War, or the Berlin Disco bombing, which was set up for the purposes of having an excuse to bomb Gaddafi, hope to kill him, and bomb Libya, all arranged, of course, by Admiral Poindexter, Oliver North, and their little team. There was an article in these Times, March the 18th, by Alexander Coburn, and he describes just the way the Reagan administration and those before him and those going all the way back to Adolf Hitler create their excuses for things that can follow later. In this article, he says that there was a November 28th story from a Mexican newspaper, Excelsior, headed U.S. proposed to Costa Rica to start war with Nicaragua. The Costa Rican ambassador to Mexico, Angel Edmundo Solano, was minister of public security in his country between 1982 and 1984. He said, when I was minister one day, Curtin Windsor, the U.S. ambassador, came to visit and to tell me it was time to extirpate the cancer, the Sandinistas being the cancer in Nicaragua. The best thing would be to contrive a maneuver whereby Costa Rica would be attacked by members of a supposed former army, which he knew perfectly well would be a disguised army of contra provocateurs. Costa Rica would then denounce this act of aggression and invoke the Inter-American Treaty of Reciprocal Assistance so that U.S. could go into action. Ambassador Solano said that when he turned down the idea, Windsor departed, and thereafter he, Solano, was the target of a ferocious smear campaign, was forced to resign August 31, 1984. And Alexander Coburn goes on to say that discussing the cancer of Nicaragua, or George Shultz saying Nicaragua is a cancer we must cut out, which he told an audience at Kansas State University, he may have not known, or he may, that he was quoting Adolf Hitler almost to the word on the day they attacked Poland. The rest of the remarks sounded like Hitler also, in quotes, negotiations are a euphemism for capitulation if the shadow of power is not cast across the bargaining table. Now, we had this same call for help, allegedly very badly needed, when Maurice Bishop was killed in Grenada. That gave the excuse for the Americans to come over, take over that island, and that was 1983. So in 1984, we wanted to be called into action to save people again against this terrible aggression, and it would be the very people that we were funding and training that would be the excuse for our actions in getting rid of that cancer in Central America. The Vatican had a quotation in their newspaper this week, a response to an anthropologist, Brunetta Chiarelli, a professor at the University of Florence. The professor was saying that it would be possible with genetic work now to make an ape man. Ape men could be bred to carry out menial tasks and provide or transplant organs. And the Vatican is objecting that this is, in quotes, a satanic attempt to destroy every presence of God in the universe. It's interesting that the Vatican is objecting to these genetic experiments whereby an anthropologist said he could breed ape men in the laboratory by fertilizing a chimpanzee with human semen. The Vatican was helpful in assisting people like Joseph Mengele, the great genetic scientist, out of the country and into Argentina and then San Paulo, Brazil. building the rat line for the likes of Klaus Barbie. So what goes around comes around, and in 1987, the geneticists who were trained or idealized as in the person of Joseph Mengele are trying to make persons, animal persons, for menial tasks. And just recently, I just mentioned briefly the plans to possibly genetically alter people's heads so that they make better pilots and stay awake and play around with their natural abilities. There was an article just briefly in the newspaper, not many papers, but in the Washington Times, and heard very quickly on ABC News a few weeks ago about Lawrence Walsh, the special prosecutor for the Iran-Contra affair, and his links to the Southern Air Transport and the CIA airline. I only have from all of my newspapers one small article, and I want to share it with you in case you didn't hear it on your television stations. The title is Legal Job for CIA Front Performed by Walsh Firm. It says Lawrence Walsh, the independent counsel investigating the Iran-Contra scandal, independent, get that, belongs to an Oklahoma law firm that represented the CIA front company, the Southern Air Transport. This was first reported by KTOK Radio and Oklahoma Gazette, and they obtained bills of sales, and they showed other lawyers in the firm of Crow and Dunleavy, the firm that Mr. Walsh belongs to, that handled the legal work in 1985 for Southern Air to purchase three Boeing 707s in 1985. Southern Air, once owned by the CIA, is now being investigated by Mr. Walsh himself, and his law firm handled the papers. Federal sources told ABC that two of the three planes purchased in 1985 from the CIA flew covert arms to the Middle East and landed in Iran. Mr. Walsh said he only learned of the Southern Air connection when reporters alerted him to it, and that he didn't share in any of the law firm's profits, and he noted the legal work involved was just routine transactions and the buying and selling of aircraft, and that Southern Air isn't a full-time client, and Southern Air, of course, is involved in taking arms down to the Contras. So he says, I didn't get any money, and they're only a part-time client. And then a member of the law firm, the same law firm of Crow and Dunleavy, by the name of Richard Ford, is working with Mr. Walsh on the special prosecutor's staff. The New York Times had a description of some of the lawyers on the team of the Iran-Contra affair, and the first they described was Arthur Lyman. He appeared the third day questioning General Secord. He's a graduate of Harvard College, Yale Law School, a partner in Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison. And again, Rifkin set up the corporation papers for TCI that developed into Stanford Technology, and it describes him being attorney for Stephen Ross of Warner Communications, and Henry Kissinger's on the board of that, and they're attorneys for Henry Kissinger, and Robert Vesco, the financier, now a fugitive from justice, also Carl Icahn, the corporate raider. Lyman also worked for Nelson Rockefeller investigating the Attica prison riots. And Mr. John Neils, the first attorney questioning Richard Secord on the stand, worked with the House Ethics Committee for 2 years investigating Korean influence peddling. And, of course, Reverend Moon, the subject of that material, who should have really been exposed further, was active with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia. He is the head of CAUSA, a group that funds the Contras, and he has headquarters throughout many countries in South America that have worked with the Nazis, the death squads, the P2, and so forth. Mr. Neils also helped prosecute Mark Feld and Edward Miller of the FBI for illegally breaking into homes, private homes, but they got off the hook also when the case was over. Now, starting next week, there's a gentleman, Robert Dutton, who's going to be on the stand, and he's described in the New York Times today as a potential gold mine. He is going to talk about the Contra supply efforts and the officials on the staff of Vice President George Bush. Now, the Sunday talk shows, the radio, television, the newspapers are going very gingerly on George Bush, who should have been removed immediately, quicker than it took to get Spiro Agnew at the time of Watergate. But they're going to lead up to Felix Rodriguez, which is one of the key parts of this whole story. Rodriguez met personally with Bush. He's admitted it now. Rodriguez wears the armband from the wristwatch of Che Guevara. He worked with Klaus Barbie and the Italian Nazi war criminal death squads. And I have described Bush as Killer Bush for a long, long time. So Dutton's testimony will be interesting. It's going to be considered very valuable, and he has gotten immunity to tell as much as the prosecutors want him to tell. One quick item, Congressman Howard Metzenbaum is going to have hearings in the Senate about the food NutraSweet, and I've warned about that or talked about it and should have done more about NutraSweet for a long time. NutraSweet allegedly has elevated levels of phenylalanine, which is linked to behavioral change and reduced attention span and loss of memory. I once read an article in the New York Times a while back on NutraSweet cutting the connective areas that are responsible for your remembering things, and these will be interesting hearings. I just insert this here so that people, if you still take NutraSweet and you're a world watcher, get off of it. Good world watchers need their memories to put these events together with things that we have heard in the past and go to the sources of the past. Douglas J. Feith, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, was talking to congressional committees about advanced biotechnology as a weapon. And this was August the 8th of this past year to the subcommittee of the House Select Committee. And I think I mentioned it before on World Watches, I believe I did. He was talking about the stunning advances in pharmaceuticals, food, and fertilizer. And he mentioned NutraSweet as a weapon. It was in the testimony, but in the Washington Post and the San Francisco Chronicle, they published word for word what he said at the hearings on August the 8th, and the Washington Post and Chronicle left out the word NutraSweet, and that was published in Executive Intelligence Review, where the entire transcript of the hearings were mentioned, and the word NutraSweet was left in, and now members of Congress are going to look again into the fact of NutraSweet as a weapon and the fact that it can erase your memory. Now, I don't know how many of you are getting the hearings every day on the radio or on television. I quickly want to run down the main witnesses of the past 2 weeks because we get ready for week three starting tomorrow. The very first week, Major General Richard Secord was on the stand talking about his partnership with Albert Hakim, 50-50, into what he calls the Stanford Technology Trading Group, which came out of, and there's still offices in Los Gatos of Stanford Technology, that bought International Imaging System, a subsidiary of TCI set up by Otto von Bolschwing. He said they still have $8 million in the bank, $2 million not accounted for. The second day, Major General Richard Secord was on the stand, and he also talked about the diversion of funds from Iran down to the Contras, and that he believed that Reagan was aware of this. He has no way of knowing, but Ollie North told him he knew. And North talked about a shredding party, which is brought up again with Robert McFarlane, destroying the records, and this is the day that William Casey died. On day three, Richard Secord was asked about profits he made. He said he did this for the love of his country and that he wasn't in it to make money, and Arthur Lyman was pressuring him about where the money went and the possibility that he had these profits, and Secord also said he thought he was carrying out the president's orders when he did these things. And then the mysterious money from the Sultan of Brunei was located that day. North had reversed a $6 and a $7 million, and the scandal of the money not being in the bank accounts has been going on for quite a long time. And then within a few days, there was a bigger lie that a person mistakenly had the $10 million, and that his name hasn't been revealed who he is or where he is, but it is very important to find out who got that $10 million, because when another deposit was made, it didn't dawn on him that he had too much. And just as they were referring to countries 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and not putting the names of countries on the air, this committee is totally compromised in almost every sense of the word, and they're going to conceal the name of the person who got the money, but it may be somebody very important, and if it is, it will come out. There are enough investigators that will bypass the committee. The fourth day was Robert McFarlane, the second week of the hearings, a national security advisor, who explained how he resigns. And this is where the raw nerves of the system become more visible. Under General Secord, you saw his connections with Albert Hakim. They both owned the business. Hakim controlled the money, was taking care of it in the Swiss banks, and it went to Mr. Willard Zucker in Switzerland, and Secord would tell where to draw out the money. McFarlane, in quotes, when he leaves the NSC, he turns it over to Admiral Poindexter. Then he goes to his home, and the word resigns is like ex-CIA or ex-Defense Department. He gets an NSC computer. He meets almost daily with Oliver North, who's like his own son. North is working with Casey and getting information about where to travel and who to get money from the send arms to Iran and divert to the Contras. And he's beginning to make trips, Robert McFarlane, to the Middle East. In May 1968, he made a trip to Iran. He made several of them. They weren't successful in getting the hostages out. But McFarlane is not salaried and on his own. Now, remember, Secord retired from the Air Force in 1983. And he connects with these people, and he's not salaried, and he's not on the books. And his name is on no piece of paper connected with TCI, or that becomes Stanford Technology Trading Group. They use all kinds of diversions to lose the tracks of where money comes from or who signs papers or orders. But the important thing is that McFarlane is, in quotes, former National Security Advisor, while he works with the National Security, doing things that even the NSC can't do. So on his own, he's supposed to be making these errands for Ronald Reagan and the powers that be. On day five, Robert McFarlane conceded that the National Security Council did give aid to the Contras. They violated the Bowman Amendment. He admitted he had not been truthful to congressional committees. He told them about his documents being shredded that Ollie North told him. And he also exposed the fact that Ronald Reagan was pleased with the donations from Saudi Arabia, which were $2 million a week, a month, to the Contras. And now Saudi Arabia wants some very expensive weapon. And the question is, did the president promise him these weapons in return for the donations to the Contras? What were the promises? Now, Gaston Segur came on this past week. He's Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Public Affairs. He's a staff member of NSC. He's a professor at the Georgetown Center for Strategic International Studies. And then another country was brought in. He solicited $2 million from Taiwan for the Contras. Well, John Singlaub is very close to Taiwan with the World Anti-Communist League and the China lobby of Chiang Kai-shek and that group set up the political network for Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. They are presidents that came out of the milieu of these organizations. And Gaston Segur could go to the head of Taiwan and get money for the Contras. The witness that followed Gaston Segur was Robert Owen, and he'll be on the stand this week. And he was tremendously interesting, and I hope most of you got to hear his testimony. And I want to pick out a few key words that he talked about and share them with you. Robert Owen was a graduate of Stanford University. He was a former aide to John Quayle, Q-U-A-L-E, of Indiana, a Republican. And he was liaison to the National Security Council and Oliver North to the Contras. Now, John Hull, the gentleman described in the Christic Institute suit, has property down in Costa Rica. He's lived there 20 years. He's a United States citizen from Indiana. And Robert Owen said his liaison with Hull had to do with Senator Dan Quayle in the first place, and his familiarity with Hull down in Costa Rica. And Hull allegedly took over the property of Robert Vesco. Vesco living in Costa Rica through the Watergate years. He's now in Havana. But Vesco is the client of the chief prosecutor in this case, and like I mentioned before, and he's also the client and partner of Willard Zucker in Switzerland, who handles the money for the Iran-Contra affairs. So the offices of Arthur Lyman represent Robert Vesco, and the bankers of this whole matter work with Robert Vesco. And Robert Vesco was in Costa Rica, moved to Havana, and Hull has that property. Vesco is also a partner with William Colby and Richard Allen in various ventures. Now, Owen became the courier for the National Security Council. He was working with Hull, who was writing the salaries for him. And he testifies about certain names that are maybe familiar to some and not to others. And I want to bring those out because in the description of the work he did going between Costa Rica and Washington, he mentioned that before he started working with Mr. Calero down in Costa Rica, that Robert Owen worked for Robert Keith Gray from the public relation firm, often referred to as the Powerhouse. Now, I always get new listeners that pick up along the way, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with Robert Keith Gray. His name surfaced at the time of the investigation and decision on whether Ed Meese should be Attorney General, because when Ed Meese needed money for his home and a job for his wife because he couldn't carry his financial obligations when he moved to Washington. It was Robert Keith Gray who intervened in the case of Edwin Meese and got his wife a job at American University and bailed Edwin Meese out. I will do more on Robert Keith Gray in a moment. The other name associated with the work of Robert Owen was Neil Livingstone, an employee of Gray Associates, and I'll tell you more about Livingstone. And then he said he also worked with John Singlaub. Singlaub, of course, is president of the World Anti-Communist League. He's on the board of directors of Western Goals. He works in the Defense Department. He's an advisor with the National Security Agency. He's one of the big wheels of the American Security Council. And he is also affiliated with Peregrine, the covert action group that hires guns, killers, out of Dallas, Texas. And I mentioned last week that his name was linked to Peregrine Company, set up by persons from the Defense Department, Defense Intelligence Agency, getting mercenaries out of the field of battle and linked right up to the White House and to the Defense Department, to a General Wilson under Caspar Weinberger in the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, Owen testified on the stand last Friday that Singlaub took him to Colorado to meet Robert Brown of Soldier of Fortune. Well, Owen has ties, I say, to the Gray public relations firm and to Mr. Livingston, who's gung-ho to kill foreign leaders. That was his expertise. He had contacts with killers all over the world, this Livingstone, out of the Gray offices. And Robert Brown also was a person active in recruiting mercenaries. He still is. He has the magazine called Soldiers of Fortune and is active in recruiting people to assassinate and do coup d'etat in order to put the power in the hands of military dictatorships. John Singlaub is on the board of Western Goals. Philip Crane is on the board of Western Goals. And 2 weeks ago, I mentioned, or last week, two men were arrested going to kill Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua. They were on their way there, and they had contacts with Philip Crane of Western Goals, who probably will deny it now, in Illinois. The stopping of these men with their $5 million to kill Ortega, I would guess, comes at a time when they don't want to be caught with their money tracing into the White House safes and the connections to the White House. This happened at the time of Watergate, when Richard Nixon was supposed to be killed, and a man named Andrew Topping from New York City was arrested, and the Secret Service came in, and the story, the circumstances of the arrest implicate or suggest that the assassination plot couldn't be accomplished because the money would link to the bank of Bernard Barker and the Watergate defendants. So when they were arrested, the money was tied up, and I imagine the blowing of this case of the two guys from Oklahoma who were going to kill Ortega happens at a time when they don't want the money to be the $5 million or whatever they would get to be tied up with the killing of Ortega to the National Security Council. So during these hearings, you're getting a view of a network of people such as General Wilson of Peregrine Company working in the White House and Defense Department's Caspar Weinberger, and private individuals like John Singlaub attached to Peregrine, and then John Singlaub working with Mr. Robert Owen and taking him up to Robert Brown's location in Colorado of Soldier of Fortune, where the Mercs are hired. Now, I have an interesting article on Neil Livingstone, the man who worked with Robert Owen, that he testifies that he worked with Robert Gray's. This came out of the Salt Lake Tribune Sunday, September 8th, 1986, and I want to give some highlights of this article about him and interject the material of the Iran-Contra affair and Robert Gray. The article says that Neil Livingstone and his wife live at the Watergate Hotel, and in one of the rooms of the apartment is decorated with death weapons, Czechoslovakian pistols, books on germ warfare. He calls himself an expert on counterterrorism. Counterterrorism is the biggest game, the fastest growing industry in America, he said. Livingstone advocates the assassination and the violent overthrow of governments. In quotes, "We should have killed the Ayatollah. As for Nicaragua, Somoza was a bad guy. These guys are worse." And just this past week, I mentioned the arrest of two people who were going into Nicaragua, were offered $5 million to kill Daniel Ortega. And Mr. Livingston said, "The right thing, in my judgment, is to overthrow the government. Whether the Contras or the U.S. should do it in Nicaragua, we must throw them out." And the background of Livingston, as he grew up in Montana, went to high school there, studied for a degree at Fletcher School of Law, which he didn't get yet, went to the university in the 1970s. And this is Livingstone's mind, and he works with Owen, who works with Sing Lab and World Anti-Communist League Western Goals and with Robert Brown. Livingstone said in quotes, "Our world is populated by people who don't enjoy our sensitivities, who don't enjoy our institutions, and quite frankly, mean real harm. We have to roll up our sleeves and do the dark and dirty deeds." Now, remember last week I quoted William Colby, the former CIA director, a gentleman who was on the board of the Nugan Hand Bank that's directly linked to Oliver North and his group. This quotation came out of Covert Action, January 1979, where Colby said, "The greatest threat to America today in the overall relationship is the Third World, that Mexicans are the biggest threat, the most obvious threat. They're breeding from 60 million to 120 million by the end of the century." And Colby said, "They're becoming increasingly displeased at the gap between our affluence and their poverty." And he goes on to say, "You could reinforce the borders, but there are not enough bullets to stop them all." So William Colby of the Phoenix Program in Southeast Asia, that worked with all of the Iran-Contra persons in the news practically, except Albert Hakim, who wasn't in Southeast Asia but linked up in Iran, the mentality of Colby is that the Third World is getting displeased between the gap of affluence and their poverty, and they will be a big threat to us. And also Mr. Livingstone saying that we have to roll up our sleeves and do dark and dirty business because these people don't enjoy our institutions and mean real harm. So Mr. Livingstone was formerly an aide to a congressman. I don't know which one. It doesn't say in this article. He's a former partner of Air Panama and a former power broker until this year with Gray & Company. He advises ABC 2020 program on terrorism. Of course, that's William Casey's Metro Media took over ABC. And he discusses chemical and biological warfare in lectures and gives courses at Georgetown University on terrorism and kidnapping, and he instructs people how to travel around the world not to look American so you're not kidnapped by the Baader-Meinhof or the Japanese Red Brigade. Now, Livingstone worked at Robert Gray & Company the same time that Robert Owen worked for them, and Robert Owen is our fourth witness to testify that he left Gray & Company to team up with Adolfo Calero. And that's the time when Robert McFarlane left the National Security to work at home to team up with North and Owen. And his work with Neil Livingstone that he mentioned in the hearings is important because Owen was associated, as I say, with John Singlau, with Robert Brown, with Soldier of Fortune, with the mercenaries that could go out and do the killings. And Mr. Livingstone is very open about the necessity to kill leaders of foreign countries. At Gray & Company, Dr. Livingstone, as he called himself, with no PhD, had his own personal document shredder. He sold guns through a company called Joseph J. Capucci Associates, a security firm for executive protection that felt they dealt counterterrorism gear through the market of special police force and so forth with infrared and night lighting devices, silencers, closely monitored by the state and the Defense Department. Livingstone lived in Bogota, Colombia, got it right the third time. He was driven out of the country, suspected by the locals when they said, "Yankee, go home." And he also, when Ronald Reagan came into office in 1981, he expected a position in the government, this Neil Livingstone, who worked with North and Owen and Singlau. His name was floated around for a job on counterterrorism. And instead of getting an appointment above board on counterterrorism, when Ronald Reagan came into office, he went to Robert Keith Gray's office, where Gray was to create an international division of Gray & Company, and he worked for him. Robert Gray needed advice about Libya, and Livingstone had also been in Libya and was kicked out as a suspected CIA agent. He was held and released. And as soon as Reagan was in office, Livingstone went to work for Gray. Now, the important thing that I mentioned on many broadcasts a while back was that Gray & Company was a takeover from Mullen Associates after Watergate when Mullen was exposed. In 1972, Mullen and Company represented this blind called Hughes organization when there was no Howard Hughes visible, and they represented Nixon's team, the Watergate plumbers, the persons working inside the basement in the White House for covert operations. Robert Mardian was part of this Watergate team. He was a defendant in the Watergate trials. He was from the Justice Department. He worked on the Inquisition-type grand juries that he set up around this country. And Robert Mardian's attorney for the Watergate hearings and so forth is Mr. Green, who was representing General Secord at the hearings this past week. I'll take a one-minute break and go into Robert Gray and Watergate in the current events and the same people reappearing on the scene now. This is Mae Brussel, and we just have about one more minute for this first half hour, so we'll take a break, and then I'll continue with the interweaving of these people going back to 1972 and even earlier.